shotglassdigital.com.
Welcome to another episode of Bad Wolf Radio, a discussion and review podcast all about Doctor Who. I am one of your hosts, Aaron Goins, and I'm here with the man who already pre-ordered his Doctor Who Lego set, Adam Farmer.
Oh, you know that's right. You know that is right. That is a huge piece of news. I think it was almost a year ago when we briefly mentioned the rumors that it was happening, and lo and behold, here we are. I'm going to have my own TARDIS blue TARDIS Lego set sitting on my desk at some point in the future.
I have good things. I think good things about this, and there's some bad things I think about this, and we will talk about it in a few minutes when we get to that part. But before we kind of get into some of the news and things that are going on in the world of Doctor Who, I did want to make kind of a big announcement for the podcast.
Yeah, huge news. It was teased on Twitter.
It was teased a little bit on Twitter. But we are very excited to announce that Bad Wolf Radio is now officially part of the Shot Glass Digital Podcast Network. So that, if you haven't heard of the Shot Glass Digital Podcast Network, it is a network that has such shows as Rebel Force Radio is probably the most well-known show that's on there. It's a Star Wars podcast. They also have Disney Vault Talk. Fangirls Going Rogue, one of my favorite shows, one of my favorite podcasts out there, Techno Retro Dads, which my good friend Josh Stolt is one of the hosts on that. A whole bunch of podcasts. I think they're up to like, what are they up to now? Over 20 different podcasts. We were kind of on our own there for a little bit, but now we have joined forces with Shot Glass Digital, so we wanted to just kind of make that announcement. You guys can find us over there, www.shotglassdigital.com. You will be able to find Bad Wolf Radio over there now, and all of our future episodes will be posted there.
Yeah, definitely big news. Super excited about that. I feel like a very little fish going out to a very big pond.
So, we were kind of talking about news. Lego is now official. We are going to get Doctor Who Lego coming soon. And I know you're pretty excited about that.
Yeah, of course.
Which I'm excited as well. I think it's really good news. The only thing that I'm kind of sad about is I actually liked the, you know, kind of minifigs that they had the character builder brand that was making the, you know, the blind bag minifigs, and you had all the different characters. They had little sets too, but I never really got that much into their sets that you could build. But the little minifigs I actually really liked, and the thing I liked about them more than Lego is the heads were actually molded differently, so the faces, you know, each doctor kind of looked like the doctor. But the thing about Lego is everything is just that same shape.
You know, you can down on the same shape all you want, but that's one of the things that I like about Lego is, although they look similar in build, they each have a little bit of character of their own. And what they've been doing recently with kind of like the body and the outfits and stuff like that, I have no doubt, especially just some of the things that I've seen so far, that they're going to nail the doctor's outfits. It's going to be really easy to see which doctors are which. And do you know for sure that the others are going away? Do you know if, I don't know, are those like another block building type set?
It is, and it's very much, you know, where Lego would be kind of like the premier, you know, out there. Like, that's what everybody buys if you're looking for, like, a, you know, building set. There's these off-brands, I guess you could say, that do the same thing. Now, I know, like, every once in a while, one of these off-brands will get one of the bigger licenses. Like, for example, you know, Lego has most of the licenses. They have Star Wars, they have Marvel, they have DC, they have you know, most of the recognizable ones, Harry Potter. But occasionally, one of these off brands will get one of the bigger licenses. For example, Halo is I can't remember the name of the brand.
Mega Bloks.
Yeah, Mega Bloks does Halo.
Yeah.
So if you want to get some Halo minifigs or you want to make a little warthog, you got to get Mega Bloks. And it's kind of the same with Doctor Who. The character builder brand had the license for the Doctor Who stuff, so they were the ones that could make the minifigs and the little sets. And I was collecting them. So I had, you know, I had all the Doctors. The only Doctor I'm missing is the War Doctor. And then the LEGO news dropped, and suddenly I'm hearing, now I'm not 100% sure about this, but I'm pretty sure this is the case, that character builder will be stopping making Doctor Who stuff.
I could definitely see that happen.
Yeah, because it wouldn't really make sense.
It's time to jump on eBay and find that War Doctor before the price skyrockets.
Exactly, and I think it might already be too late. So, yeah, I need to find that War Doctor as soon as possible because, yeah, I think because they won't be making anything new, the prices will probably go up a bit. But I just got to get that last one. So,
calling all listeners, track down a War Doctor.
A War Doctor, yeah. So, but I'm excited about LEGO having it as well. I just hope, you know, it's not just kind of like one set and done kind of thing. Like, oh, yeah, you know. Because Doctor Who, as much as we like it, and it is kind of becoming more mainstream, it's definitely not on the level of something like Star Wars or Marvel or DC, where they're, you know, they're, everyone's out buying those sets and, you know, that's all like household, you know, every household knows what those brands are. Doctor Who is still kind of a fringe thing when you're talking about mass population.
Right, but here's the thing. If they come out with a TARDIS, and being that it's Doctor Who, you can't have Doctor Who without all of the Doctors, and then maybe a Dalek here and there. If I could have my TARDIS, all the Doctors, and then maybe a few key villains, Weeping Angel, Cybermen, Dalek, what have you, I would be pretty pleased with that. Even if it is just a handful of one set and minifigs, I'd be pretty happy. It'd still be cool.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how long. Like, I could see the first set just being, you know, the current Doctor with the TARDIS, you know, and maybe Clara. You know, and then that, they're not going to get to a full set of Doctors, you know, maybe until like years down the road. You know, they're going to test the market a little bit to see if people are even going to buy it before we get, you know, the entire minifig set of all 12, 13 Doctors. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, just imagine that, what they can do with the history, what they can do with everything they have to work with. I mean, could you imagine a Sensorite Lego set? I mean, come on, that's printing money right there.
Hey, if it reaches its full potential, I love this idea. I just hope it doesn't fizzle out, and then we're wishing that they were still making the character builder stuff because suddenly LEGO realizes they can't make a ton of money off Doctor Who.
So I have a real sincere question for you. So let's say that you get your TARDIS LEGO set. And you have Capaldi for your Doctor, you have Clara for your companion, and you just so happen to have Danny Pink as well. Do you put Danny Pink in the TARDIS, or do you just kind of leave him off in the corner by himself?
Is this our 5 minutes of Danny Pink segment?
This is our 5 minutes of Danny Pink. I have no other way to get him in this episode, but I had to mention him.
I don't know if we could fill out 5 minutes. Yeah, if Danny Pink is in the set, I will have him. Actually, he will be on the couch, the little Lego couch sitting in the apartment with his hands over his little Lego face. Or maybe on the cell phone checking to see if Claire's texting him. But did you see we got a response on Facebook about our Danny Pink? We should acknowledge that.
Yeah, and I totally appreciate that.
So I'm going to pull it up because I want to give this guy some credit. All right, so we got a message on our last episode when we posted it on Facebook. We got one of our listeners actually sent us a quick comment, so I wanted to read it here. It says, about Danny Pink being introduced as a companion, Nerdist got that from TV Guide, and TV Guide got it wrong. The BBC introduced him as a recurring character, Chinese Whispers, folks. Cheers. So that was from Danny Butler. So he's basically calling us out and saying, hey, you guys, you keep talking about this, but it's all based on wrong information. He was never actually officially said, it was never officially said that he was a companion by the BBC. That was one site got it wrong, another site picked it up, and then
the telephone game.
Yeah, so we saw it on the third site, I guess, and so we have been running with the wrong information. So if Danny's right, which I'm going to just believe he is, we will drop that subject now, officially. We may still give Danny Pink his 5 minutes, but we will no longer commiserate the fact that he never actually was a companion. We will let that die. Are you okay with that, Adam?
I still wanted him to be a companion, but I will accept the fact that I was lied to.
We lied to ourselves.
We lied to ourselves.
The hopes and expectations for Danny Pink were always too high. And that's not Danny Pink's fault.
No, that's not Danny Pink's fault.
And that is the end of our 5 minutes of Danny Pink. May he rest in peace.
Rest in peace. Too soon.
So, Lego, it's coming. But I am excited about... Also, it was announced that Doctor Who pop vinyls are coming. Now, I think this was actually announced a little while ago, but it was, I think they were first revealed at the recent New York Toy Fair that happened a few weeks ago, I think.
That's correct.
So they showed, I don't know if they actually had the actual figures there or just showed images of them, but they will be coming. There's going to be, I think, a 10th Doctor, an 11th Doctor. There's going to be a TARDIS. There's going to be an Adipose,
yes,
which I think works for pop vinyl. That's going to be really cool. I think a Dalek. I think a Weeping Angel. Am I missing any?
A surprisingly cute Cyberman.
Okay. So if you're not aware of what a pop vinyl is, it's kind of the company out there called Funko. They do a lot of vinyl toys, or I guess they don't call them toys, but they're kind of figurines that are mainly meant to be collected, and they have just about every license. So if you want to get some Game of Thrones ones, or Walking Dead, or Marvel, or DC, or Star Wars, and now Doctor Who. Doctor Who has been one of the licenses that has kind of been glaringly missing from their repertoire. So I was thrilled to see this, because I actually do collect the pop vinyls. I have a lot of them on my desk at work. Funko does awesome work with this stuff. So I'm really excited that they're doing these, and I will be getting a 10th Doctor, probably a TARDIS, maybe an Adipose, right away, and then we'll see if I collect the rest of them. What are your feelings on this? Are you excited about these pop vinyls coming out?
Yeah, I'm starting to mix up my collection a little bit. So I have the Titan figures that were licensed by the BBC a little bit ago. So I have a couple of those. But now that they're coming out with these, like you mentioned, Funko has pretty much the market when it comes to these types of figures right now. I'm kind of thinking that they're even the ones that ran Mighty Mugs out of business.
Yes.
Because they started sweeping through and taking over.
I have a drawer full of Mighty Mugs. Like, literally, I was a Mighty Mug collector. I was collecting all the Star Wars ones, and then suddenly pop vinyls came out, and I was like, these are so much cooler. And now all my old Mighty Mugs are sitting in a drawer somewhere. I have officially transferred to Funko.
Yeah, and they're so easy to find everywhere. Like walking through Target, you can find them just at the end of aisles. Going to Hot Topic, you can find a ton of them there. I think I've even seen them at Old Navy walking around. Well, they're not walking around. I'm walking around and I see them at Old Navy.
Books A Million has them. Barnes & Noble has them.
Yeah.
And any comic book convention you go to, you can literally find booths where you will find hundreds of these of every type that you could ever want. And just the most obscure stuff, like what, no matter what you're into, you will probably be able to find a pop vinyl for it.
Yeah. So, speaking of which, not only did they announce Doctor Who, but they also announced 16 Candles pop vinyls, which that movie from like the 80s.
Yeah.
So they really do have the license to everything. And now adding Doctor Who to the queue. So, yeah, I'm excited. I'll definitely be picking up some of these. I'm not sure which ones, probably whichever ones I can get my hands on. I would love to have these lining my desk as well.
Yeah, I will get a 10th Doctor as soon as I can find one. That'll be my first purchase, and then slowly I will add to the collection from there. Probably worth noting, although we weren't in attendance, Gallifrey 1 happened, which I guess is kind of the premier Doctor Who convention. I have been going to comic book conventions probably a good 5-6 years now, and I have never gone to a Doctor Who convention. Gallifrey 1 is kind of the one to go to, from what I hear, but it's all the way in California. I'm out here in Pennsylvania. Haven't made it out there yet, but it did just happen. Have you, you know, did you hear anything about Gallifrey 1, or have you ever been tempted to try to make it out there?
Up to this point, I haven't been tempted to try to make it out there. Now that I know that it exists, now that I know that it's a yearly thing, I would love to head out there. California has so many awesome events that I'd love to make it out there for. Comic-Con, E3, and now Gallifrey 1. Hopefully at some point I'll be able to make it out there. I just probably have to decide which one I'll head out there for first. It seems like Gallifrey 1 would probably be the easiest one to get into at this point. Tickets for 2016 go on sale May 1st, which is pretty far in advance, and it looks like it sells out pretty quickly. So,
oh, really?
You have to start thinking about it soon, because we got 2 months before they go up for sale again.
Well, maybe we can make a plan and have some sort of a Bad Wolf Radio presence at a future Gallifrey 1.
Yes.
So far, we've had a Bad Wolf Radio presence at the small local convention RetroCon here in Pennsylvania. So maybe the next step will be to go to one of these bigger conventions and have a bit of a presence there. So we'll see. Well, hopefully that's in our future.
I did see an article recently on the top conventions for U.S. Doctor Who fans to make it to. There's one in Chicago, which is about a four-hour drive from where I'm at right now. I might have to look into that. That would be fun just to show up and walk around. I don't know about a Bad Wolf Radio presence right off the bat, but it would be fun just to see what happens, the guests are. I think that would be the most interesting thing. What types of guests show up at a Chicago-based Doctor Who convention?
Maybe we'll just get you a T-shirt made, and then like you can hand out some Bad Wolf Radio pins or something.
Yes, it's definitely time to start rocking T-shirts.
Start small. But yeah, so any news about like Season 9 out there right now?
Spoilers.
Yeah, funny you should bring that up. That's a lot of stuff has started to roll in here within the last week or two. Just today, a picture was tweeted of filming going on in the Canary Islands. So they mentioned earlier on that an entire episode of Doctor Who is going to be filmed in Spain. Whether this is the Doctor Who episode that's going to be filmed in Spain, the Canary Islands are actually a part of Spain, or if there's going to be yet another episode taking place in Spain. But a picture was posted on Twitter that has the 12th Doctor, or Capaldi, Clara, and then there's also a random alien-looking person in the picture as well. So people are starting to speculate, is that a new alien that we're going to be seeing? Of note, where they're filming, there's a very large volcano, so is it a volcanic alien, what have you? Are we going to get another, maybe, possibly, mention of Pompeii? I don't know. But they're filming on that island, so that was pretty big news that came out today. Mentioned it on our Facebook page. Missy is back, which, not much of a spoiler. We were all kind of expecting that anyways. There was a lot coming out after the last episode of Series 8 that, yes, she would be back. It was just a matter of when. It sounds like it might be the very first episode of Series 9 that Missy is back in the picture. What's up?
I was going to say, let's talk about this. Well, number one, it's really not a spoiler at all, because BBC has been blasting it all over the place.
Oh, heck yeah.
So they're definitely promoting this. It's not like a leaked thing, or nobody got some, you know, on-set photos. This was something that was officially released by the BBC. Missy is back. So you're saying it might be first episode. Is that, what do you think? Too soon? too soon to get Missy? I mean, I knew she'd come back eventually, but man, they're really, I guess maybe they really liked her performance and were like, hey, let's not have too much of a good thing here.
Yeah, I don't know if it's too soon. The way that she's nuts, even with the short video that they put out there, there's just something off about her. The way that she plays the character, there's just something like off. You aren't quite sure if she's just acting or if she really is just downright crazy, if she's bananas. So I'm actually excited to have her back. I'm excited to see what she does. It's really interesting what they've done introducing her as the master. I'm ready to see it play out. Somebody pointed out that she has a time vortex manipulator on her wrist in the video. So there's speculation flying around about that. Like, is that how she escaped? Did she get that from Captain Jack? Did she get that from Riversong? Where does that come into play? It's just, I'm excited to see what they do with her. It's going to be really fun.
Huh. Me too. I think there was a time where I wasn't a big fan of the character of Missy, but after her performance in the finale, I think she's a good foil for the Doctor and a good character. So.
Yeah. I totally agree with that idea of her being a foil for the Doctor, especially Capaldi's Doctor. I don't know if she would work as well with someone who's just able to laugh it off, like Matt Smith's Doctor, or even Tennant, who did have some intensity. But there's just something about how she plays off of Capaldi that I'm really interested to see how they continue to evolve that relationship.
So what else has been out there?
Kind of expected it, considering the way that Series 8 ended once again, but Kate Lethbridge Stewart is back in the picture, which seems to indicate that UNIT is going to be back showing up in Series 9. So surprise, surprise, we have another returning character. The series has been confirmed for autumn of 2015. I think we already knew that. But it has been confirmed autumn 2015. We have Series 9 showing back up. And we mentioned in a previous episode that we knew that the first episode was called The Magician's Apprentice. We now know that the second episode is called The Witch's Familiar. And one thing that's interesting is that Claire Higgins, who played one of the witches from the Sisterhood of Karn for that short with the Eighth Doctor, the Night of the Doctor, where he decides to be a warrior and then we get the War Doctor, she's showing back up in an episode. So
was that officially released, or is that kind of spoilery? Claire Higgins.
I don't know. It's probably spoilery. So let me rehash that. Spoiler alert.
Well, I can put a Riversong tag in before that. But cool. Yeah, I was just kind of curious if that was kind of something that had been dug up, or if that was an official announcement by the BBC.
See, that's the problem here when it comes to like official announcements, just because of the different sources that are like slowly mentioning things as far as who guest stars are. She's listed as one of the guest stars for Series 9. Okay. Now, whether BBC made like a big announcement about that, I'm not sure. It might be very similar to the guy they mentioned from Game of Thrones showing back up and a few other names that have been floating around out there as far as returning to Doctor Who. Another big thing that came up, which I don't know if either of us really want to spend much time talking about it, but Shona from the Christmas special, it was rumored that she would be showing back up for Series 9 and potentially joining the TARDIS as a companion. She has essentially shot that down altogether and said as much as she would love that for that to be true, it's not happening. But then again, it's Doctor Who, it's rumors. We could end up with her showing up at some point anyways. It's just funny that rumor has started already that Shona could be showing back up and could potentially be a companion down the road.
Nice. I think that tends to happen anytime in Doctor Who. Anytime there's a character that is like somewhat likable or kind of quirky, it's always the next rumor like, oh, they're going to be the next companion. So it doesn't surprise me that was just a rumor. But the whole thing about Claire Higgins and the Sisterhood of Karn and that's got me a little intrigued. The Witch's Familiar is the title, and we might get another appearance of the Sisterhood of Karn. Not that they would do this, but how cool would that be if we got a little bit of a crossover Doctor episode with the Eighth Doctor again?
I I would like that.
I mean, you could kind of see the that 6 minute, was it like a 6 minute little mini episode, I guess?
I think it was shorter than that, but we all wanted it to be longer.
Yeah. I mean, you could kind of look at that as almost like a little bit of a test, you know, that was like a test to see what people's reaction would be. But based on fan reaction, you know, bringing that doctor back, even if it was just for one episode, I think would be pretty successful for them.
Definitely. It really got, it revitalized the Eighth Doctor in everybody's minds. Like when that was available for people to watch, there was so much coming out about Paul McGann that everybody wanted to see him in more stuff.
Even go out and seek out the audio dramas and listen to a bunch of those. You know, I was hyped up. I got on that bandwagon for a while.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I would love it. And we got to get that movie. We got to get the Eighth Doctor movie, watch it, and do a nice review of that on Bad Wolf Radio eventually.
Yeah, that would be fun. I would love to do that. One more thing on the Witches of Karn. Just want to throw that out there. The Sisterhood of Karn, the Witches Familiar. One thing I want to throw out there is that is what started all the speculation within the recent storyline as far as the gender of the Doctor. And then we had Missy, the Master, showing up as the female Master, Missy. Now we have Missy rumored as being in the first two episodes of Series 9, one of them including The Witches of Karn, which started the whole conversation about the female Doctor. I'm wondering if we're going to find some tie-in. Now, this is like probably way far out in left field, probably has no bearing whatsoever, but I'm wondering if we're going to find out, have a tie-in with the Master maybe taking the Sisterhood of Karn up on switching genders like that. Maybe it wasn't a random thing that Missy ended up as Missy as opposed to the Master. Maybe she took the Sisterhood of Karn up on the option that the Eighth Doctor turned down.
Huh. That would be very interesting. So let's hope it's that interesting. What's going to end up happening is it's a complete misdirect. There'll be nothing to do with any of that, and we'll be like, okay. But for now, we can get really excited about the possibilities.
Oh, and you know me. I will be really excited about the possibilities. And I will say all sorts of possibilities that will never end up happening and we'll just forget other than the fact that they're recorded.
So before we are going to do a Classic Doctor episode review today. But one of the things that we always ask our listeners is to send us an email. If you have any feedback about the show, if you have any thoughts about Doctor Who in general, you know, we'd love to hear you. You know, so send us an email. We say it at the end of every episode. Well, we have some emails. We have got some emails. Kind of a funny story. We have an email account that we share for the Doctor Who podcast for Bad Wolf Radio. And apparently, Adam thought I was checking the emails. I thought Adam was checking the emails. Neither of us were checking the emails. So we went through our emails that we didn't even realize were there. We picked out three emails here that we are going to read from listeners, and I'm not even going to say two of them are pretty recent. One of them is extremely old. We missed it, and I'm just going to say we missed it. I'm sorry we missed it. Hopefully the person that sent us this email is still a listener and hears this, but
it was an awesome email.
It was a great email, and that's why we're going to read it, even though it's very old, and I'm not going to say how old it is because that's just embarrassing that we missed it for that long. But we will first read, I'm going to read an email here from Kenny. He's actually a very loyal listener. He talks to us a lot on Facebook. He sends us messages. He posts stuff on Facebook as well about Doctor Who, kind of tips us off with information that's going on or news. And we really appreciate Kenny. So he did send us an email. So I wanted to read his email here. It's a bit long, and I don't know if I'll read the whole thing, but let's see. I'll try to get through this. He says, "Hello, Bad Wolf Radio, and Aaron and Adam. I've liked and enjoyed Bad Wolf Radio and listened to the podcast each week." Well, that's impressive because we don't do an episode every week, but I
give him the benefit of the doubt. He re-listens to some of the episodes more than once.
That would be commitment. If he's like, they don't have an episode this week, I'm just going to re-listen to the last episode. So he says, "I've been a Doctor Who fan since 2013 and have enjoyed it ever since. My favorite things about Doctor Who from both the classic series and modern series. So he's kind of listing off some of his favorites. So we'll go through here. He says, from the modern series, his favorite doctor, or no, from the classic series, his favorite doctors are Tom Baker and Paul McGann. From the modern series, David Tennant, Matt Smith, Peter Capaldi. So he must not have liked he must not have liked Chris Eccleston very much. Everybody gets their due there except for Chris. He says his favorite series were series 5, 7, and 8. So I guess he means seasons 5, 7, and 8 from the modern series, classic series, all the Tom Baker episodes, and the Doctor Who TV movie. So there's a shout out there for the Eighth Doctor again.
Nice.
His favorite Doctor Who villains: the Master, of course, Daleks, Cybermen, and Prisoner Zero.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. His favorite companions: Sarah Jane Smith, Rose Tyler, Martha Jones, Donna Noble, Amy Pond, Rory Williams, Captain Harkness, Claire Oswald. So that's a good list there. I'd agree with most of those other than Martha.
I wonder if they're in order.
Maybe. We'll have to ask him. Send us another email, Kenny. Tell us. But let's see here. Favorite episodes: The 11th Hour. I have to agree with you on that one, Kenny. That's my favorite episode as well. The Day of the Doctor, another good choice.
Solid.
End of Time Part 2. Man, he's right on. He's right on here. Rose, The Time of the Doctor, Deep Breath, Listen, Journey's End, Asylum of the Daleks. He says, take care, guys. Keep up the good work with the podcast, Adam and Aaron, and Geronimo. Sincerely, longtime Doctor Who fan and faithful Bad Wolf Radio listener, Kenny Crowley Jr. from Ohio.
Heck yes.
So thank you, Kenny. And that's some good lists there. Definitely the episodes that you listed, I would have to agree with most of them. That those are some of my favorites as well.
Yeah, totally. And he signs off with Geronimo, which is just one of the best ways to sign off.
Definitely. Okay, so here's the one that we got a long time ago. So this is from Monique, and hopefully she's still listening and gets to hear us read this. But she says, I'm a new listener to Bad Wolf Radio and a fairly new, although extremely passionate Doctor Who fan. I started watching The Doctor about a year ago, starting with The Ninth Doctor, and although it did take me a few episodes to get into it, I had to force myself to get through the first and second episodes, lol. But after that, I was well and truly hooked. None of my friends watch Doctor Who, despite my many attempts to force them to watch it. So it's awesome to be able to listen to someone talk about it, so thank you for that. I would love to hear you talk about some of the newer villains, specifically the Weeping Angels and the Silence. Sincerely, Monique. So hopefully from the time that you sent us this email till now, hopefully we've talked about the Weeping Angels and the Silence enough. but we really appreciate the email, Monique. We apologize that it took us so long to read it. And if you do hear this, we'd love to hear from you again. And we appreciate you listening to the show.
And I totally get what she says about the first and the second episode. I think we've all experienced that when if those were your first experience with Doctor Who, watching the first and second episode of Eccleston, they were rough. It took some real grit to make it through those episodes. But then, like she says, after those two episodes, you find yourself just absolutely hooked.
And I would say to her as well, you know, if you're trying to get your friends to watch Doctor Who, if you don't have any friends that like Doctor Who, my suggestion would be you need to find some new friends.
Oh, come on. No, now.
I've been lucky. I've been, you know, I think I've talked about it on the show before, but most of my friends that I have shared Doctor Who with have actually picked up on it and stuck with it and enjoyed it. I have had some duds, but you were one of them, Adam. But yeah so.
And now look at us.
So, Monique, keep trying. You will find a friend out there that will enjoy the show, I'm sure. All right, so the last... Oh, she said... Did I miss her P.S.?
You did miss her P.S.
Oh, she says, P.S., love your hip-hop Who intro song.
Which, I mean, she nails it there. That's like one of the... I love our intro.
Absolutely I love our intro, love too. Our intro. The only thing about our intro now is that it's a Matt Smith intro. And so it's almost like I feel like we need to update it at least to have a quote from Peter Capaldi maybe instead of Matt Smith. I don't know. What do you think, Adam? Should we stick with the Smith for a while?
We need to send it to Fiverr and see if we can pay someone $5 to record us a new hip-hop Doctor Who intro.
All right, so last email we got here. This is a really good one. This came pretty recently. This is from Deb, and she says, just bumped into this podcast today and listened to the first and last episode. And then she says, in parentheses, my standard procedure for new casts, The first episode is always a good intro, and the last shows how you've grown. So I like that. I like that approach. If you find a new podcast, go back, listen to the first episode, and then listen to the latest episode just to kind of see where, you know, how they've grown and how different the show is. And I'd love to hear kind of her feedback on what she did think about that. But she goes on here, I just wanted to drop a line and let you know that I really enjoyed the show. I particularly enjoy that you're both new series fans and are unapologetic about that. Being involved in the Doctor Who podcast community, I know there is a certain level of prejudice against those fans who aren't carrying the flag for all 50 years. But let's face it, it's not for everyone, and there's nothing wrong with that. During a panel at New York Comic Con, I was asked by a guilty young fan where she should start to try to love classic Who, and I told her there wasn't a law that said she had to, and if she only loved new Who, that was okay and made her just as much of a fan as those who have been around since the beginning. No one is going to send you a secret decoder ring if you pass some arbitrary fan test. Anyway, great job, and looking forward to hearing more. Deb Stanish from the Verity podcast, which when I saw that, I was like, oh, she has her own podcast. And so I went and looked it up, and it's like a really cool podcast.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I would recommend. I listened to a few episodes. They actually were at Gallifrey 1, so they did some reporting from there. So if any of you listeners have not heard of the Verity podcast, I would recommend Google it, find them online, and start listening to that show as well. I definitely recommend it.
Yeah, my proverbial hat is off to Deb for her kind words. Totally means a lot, especially coming from someone else who does a podcast. That it means so much what she said. And then she totally nailed it with the idea of where to start with classic Who. It grows on you. I'm definitely finding it grows on you, but I don't think that you have to carry, like she says, carry the flag for all 50 years to be a Doctor Who fan. Bravo if you do. Bravo if you do. But there's definitely room for all Who fans underneath the same banner.
Definitely. And maybe a good place to tell people to start on the classic Who series might be with the Time Meddler.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Great segue.
So we are doing our classic review here. We're moving on to the next storyline of Doctor Who, the next storyline available on Hulu Plus, kind of going through those. So we are on the Time Meddler, which is the final story of season two. So Adam, we have made it through two seasons of classic Doctor Who. We are moving on to season three. Are you proud of yourself?
I would be lying if I said I wasn't. Yeah, I'm proud of myself. I've watched the first Doctor, two seasons of the first Doctor, classic.
Yeah, as much as we could consume that Hulu Plus let us consume, but yeah. So this is this came out in July of 1965. Writer Dennis Spooner, director Douglas Camfield, and yeah. So this was a good one. When I saw the title, The Time Meddler, I had a certain expectation of what it might be about, and it didn't disappoint me. We did get to meet another time traveler.
Yeah.
Which I didn't think was something that I was going to see, and I don't want to get into it too much because we can get into that part of the story, I guess, when we get there. But yeah, I was pleasantly surprised with these episodes, and I have to say I really enjoyed them. I didn't feel like, because it's the, we had talked about it last time. The last one we did was The Chase, and there were six episodes, and we were kind of talking about, like, you know, like we almost always say when there's like a six or seven episode, you know, run for one of these stories, it's like, oh, they could have told that story in three episodes or four episodes. I didn't feel that way with this one. You know, it was a four episode story arc, but I never felt like they were dragging things out. It's like they're finally starting to condense the stories maybe a little bit better. How did you feel about that?
Yeah, I completely agree that it seemed like each episode, which it was four episodes long, so it wasn't a six episode arc. But I felt like each episode was actually used well. I didn't feel like it was left hanging at any certain point. I didn't feel like I could honestly hack off any entire episode to make the entire arc shorter. And I honestly enjoyed each minute of these episodes. I don't know if it's just I'm growing more accustomed to maybe the flow of how these stories are told. If the characters are growing on me now that we don't have Susan, now that Barbara and Ian are gone, so we now have Vicky, and then we were introduced to Steven for these stories, which we were wondering where he kind of entered after the last episode. I don't know if just kind of like the new companions have me a little bit more excited, but I really enjoyed these episodes. And like you said, kind of with the title of the episode, Time Meddler, you were expecting something, and I wasn't disappointed. It surpassed my expectations for what it was going to be about.
So you brought up Steven. We kind of, in the last episode, we were wondering what happened to him. Because we had seen, you know, kind of a spoiler for us, you know, if there can be a spoiler from 1965. But we saw that Steven was going to become a companion. But at the end of the chase...
But we also saw him left behind.
Yes, at the end of the chase, they left. You know, the TARDIS left. He wasn't on the TARDIS, as far as we knew. And so it was kind of like...
Darn you, TV guide.
And
darn
I kind
you,
of,
TV guide, lying to us again.
I kind of even said, you know, well, maybe he snuck onto the TARDIS. You know, I didn't know. I didn't look ahead. So I wasn't sure how exactly he was going to be back with the crew. But that's basically exactly what happened. Now, he didn't necessarily sneak onto the TARDIS more than... It sounded like he kind of stumbled into the TARDIS.
Right.
But yeah, so he is now a companion. I did have some questions about how exactly that works, because they always made such a big deal about how hard it was to get into the TARDIS.
Yeah, the 1965 TARDIS has some major security issues if someone who's part dead could stumble in.
Yes. So my in-universe rationalization for this is that the TARDIS, because it has a mind of its own, basically let him in, knowing, you know, that he was going to be a good companion, that he basically, it opened the door for him in a time of need and let him onto the TARDIS.
I will accept that answer. I thought it was funny that they thought it was a Dalek, though. When they heard the noise, their first assumption was, oh goodness, a Dalek is in our sleeping compartment. And what does the doctor do? The doctor does what every person in their right mind does when a Dalek's in their sleeping compartment. He takes off his jacket, because you throw it over the eye stalk and that Dalek is useless.
Yeah. So yeah, that was a nice throwback, because that is actually a strategy they used in the past. So when he pulled his jacket off, I was like, hey, he knows what he's doing. That's what you do.
Yeah, totally.
But if only the people on that ship, that poor Mary Celeste, if only they had known that strategy, they might have survived.
If only they wore jackets.
Yeah.
My kingdom for a jacket.
But I'm just laughing, remembering that Dalek going off the edge and his head popping off. Yeah, so we have Steven Taylor as the new companion. What were your kind of, I know we got to see him in the chase a little bit, but now we have him as an official full companion. What were your thoughts? Is he a nice replacement for Ian?
Yeah,
because that's basically what he is, right? He's the new Ian.
That's what he is. He's the muscle, if you will. I like him. I really do. I like that he spent vast majority of the episodes doubting the reality of what actually was going on. That he really didn't believe that it was a time traveling spaceship or time traveling ship. He thought it was just a normal spaceship. He wondered how it was. Like how he didn't realize it was bigger on the outside when he stumbled into it, but he definitely recognized how big it was on the inside. There was even something in the interaction between Vicky and Steven that just seemed real. It seemed natural. It didn't seem like we were watching actors from the 1960s. It seemed like we were watching something actually taking place. I really like him.
Yes, these two actors are much better. Vicky and Steven, they're just much better actors, in my opinion, than Ian and Barbara were. I liked the characters of Ian and Barbara because I think they grew on me. There were things about, especially Barbara and, you know, Susan, we've talked about a lot, that just really irked me. and I wasn't a big fan of a lot of things that they did. Ian, I was a little bit more a fan of, but he definitely had his weirdness too. And the guy just wasn't really that good of an actor, you know. But Steven, you know, it's just, as I'm watching these, you're right, it's more of a believable, they're more believable characters. You're not sitting there going, okay, I'm watching a, you know, really bad acting from the 60s. Like, it's starting to feel like, okay, this show, they're getting more solid stories with better acting, and it's starting to become an enjoyment to watch these stories unfold, as opposed to kind of picking out all the funny set pieces and the flubbed lines and stuff that kind of seemed like we were doing more in season one and halfway through season two.
Yeah, and it seems like the better acting by Vicky and Steven, or the actors that play Vicky and Steven, kind of elevates even my opinion of the Doctor. Like, the Doctor, I don't feel like he has grown or changed at all throughout the episodes. He seems pretty much the same, although he's not as mean as he was when we first started out. But it seems like even their interactions with him, his interactions with the other characters, it just seems all around more polished. It's like you said, it's actually enjoyable to watch. I'm laying there watching it and I'm laughing because I'm enjoying myself. I'm not laughing, like you said, at some weird set pieces or some guy in a leotard. I'm laughing because the value is actually higher than what I thought it was.
Yeah, across the board. And even the TARDIS, like, you know how at the beginning of almost every episode they'll have like the TARDIS model, if you could call it that. And I think you had said at one point it looked like it was like a fish tank ornament. Yeah. You know, that's how bad it was. And now it's, you know, I don't know if it was a fully built out TARDIS in some of these shots, but it looks a lot better. They're not using kind of that toy model, it doesn't seem, anymore. Or if they are, they're doing a much better job of it. So even that part of it, they're just getting better at some of these details. That's making it a little bit more of a believable world to watch.
Now, do you think this episode, because this episode focuses on a historical event, or at least that's the story that surrounds it, a historical event. And both of us have mentioned how we really like how when the Doctor goes back in time and deals with something from history. Do you think that's kind of bolstered this episode in a way that we were dealing with something that was a little bit more anchored, and so it gave them a little bit better of a story to work with?
Yeah, I think so. And I think that's always going to be the case, especially when you're talking about the classic series, is when it's based more in our known reality, it's probably easier for them, you know, to make that a believable world, where anytime they're dealing with aliens, suddenly we're back to, you know, people in weird jumpsuits and weird masks that just, you know, just don't look right. If you just have to put a beard on somebody or put a Viking hat on somebody, it's a little easier to kind of get lost in that world.
Yeah, and they even went further than that, though, which now that I'm thinking about is pretty amazing, because they didn't only like just strap on leather on someone or put a beard on them and have them run around, but we saw the entire Viking ship, and it looked legit.
With like a whole crew on there. Yeah, I thought that scene did stick out to me. I was impressed. I was like, oh, wow, that's something we haven't seen yet, you know, on Doctor Who, where it looks like they went out and actually went onto a boat and got a bunch of guys and had them, you know, acting like they're rowing, and like it looked like something that wasn't shot in a studio, which pretty much everything else they've ever done is very obvious.
Yeah.
So yeah, definitely they're taking it up a notch. The Viking costumes were believable. You know, it wasn't, they didn't look comical to me. There was some comical stuff that happened with the Vikings, but the costumes I thought looked really good.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that I've seen some similar outfits within the Marvel Universe when we visit Asgard.
Yeah, there was the one Viking that did kind of look like, now I'm not super familiar with Thor or the comics, the Thor comics, but the one kind of pretty boy Viking.
Yeah.
I don't know his name, but yeah, there was a Viking that kind of made me think of that character from Thor.
Nice.
But the scene that I was talking about, kind of like that was a little bit funny though, was when the Vikings end up fighting against the locals there, and their little skirmish, and some of the sword fighting and stuff was pretty bad. So they still need to work a little bit maybe on their fight choreography, But they're getting there. They're getting there.
I was pretty sure at that point there were some spies within the villagers, because they really didn't want to kill those Vikings.
They were
they were doing everything they could not to stab those Vikings.
There were a few casualties though. But
there were.
Let's talk a little bit about the TARDIS itself, because something that I don't know if they've mentioned this before in the classic series, or maybe I just missed it, but kind of the revelation that the Doctor really doesn't know how to control the TARDIS. Like, he doesn't know how to make it go anywhere specific. It's completely random. And that the whole idea that the TARDIS is supposed to camouflage itself is something that the Doctor is kind of in denial, you know, that that it's not working. I thought that was interesting. Have they said before that the Doctor really had no idea, like it was completely random everywhere they went?
I think they've mentioned the chameleon circuit before, and they've kind of like alluded to the fact that he couldn't control what was going on.
But they've never flat out said it. Like, I've always, the way I've always viewed the TARDIS is the Doctor, he for the most part can control it, but there will be times that the TARDIS kind of gets a mind of its own and takes him somewhere. But for the most part, he can go, you know, where he wants to go. At least in the modern series, I think that is very much the case.
Right, right.
But in the classic series, I always thought that was the case as well, and it seemed like he kind of had somewhat control of where they're going. But this was the first time where they literally say he really has zero control, and they kind of use it as a plot point, because later on in the episode, when they thought the TARDIS had left them, when Vicky and Steven thought the TARDIS had left them, Vicky was like, well, he can't come back and get us because he doesn't know how to.
Right.
So
it felt very much like one of those reveals where the Doctor has been lying this entire time, and we've kind of gotten hints of it, but it's never been explicitly said. And now it's just one of those big things where it's just like, oh yeah, it's out there. Especially when it's said next to the Time Meddler character, the monk, and what he's able to do with his equipment, that it brings everything that the Doctor really is lost. He's just kind of afloat to wherever the TARDIS ends up.
And I wonder at what point, or if that will change, you know, as the classic series goes on. I would think that it would change as the Doctor, you know, moves on to other versions of himself, that he will eventually be able to gain control of where he's going. But it is funny to me that this chameleon circuit, as much as the Doctor seems to be able to, you know, fix things, and I know the TARDIS has regenerated itself, you know, and the interior of the TARDIS looks very different, you know, across a bunch of different Doctors, but the one thing that can never get fixed is that chameleon circuit. And you almost wonder, is that because either, number one, does the TARDIS not want it to be fixed because it kind of likes the way it looks? Or is the Doctor attached to the way the TARDIS looks and is purposely not fixing it?
Yeah, I think by the point where we are now, and I'm trying to remember where it even came up before, I think he's just connected with how it looks now. I think it's even come up someplace, but I can't put my finger on it. What I really loved about this episode, though, is when Vicky is explaining it to Steven, and she's like, yeah, so if we show up here, it will show up like this. And if we show up here, then it would show up like this. And he's like, so if we show up in 11th century England, that's why it looks like a 1960s phone box. Like, yeah. I just love...
Yeah, if we show up on a cliff,
awesome interaction.
If we show up on a cliff, it'll look like a rock, right? And she's like, and the Doctor even was like, yeah. And he's like, oh, well, that doesn't, you know, that doesn't look like a rock.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, that was, yeah, that's always been something that I've wondered. But yeah, I think the Doctor just at this point, just that's the way the TARDIS looks to him, and he's never gonna fix it. So.
Yeah.
But yeah, so the big thing in this story was the monk. We have this monk. Throughout the episodes, they're dropping hints that he has been traveling through time, because he has a watch that's not from that time. He's got some technology in his monastery that is obviously from the future. And so, you're kind of wondering, okay, we have this guy, he's able to travel through time, but you're not exactly sure how. And I kind of was wondering if it was going to be something like when the Doctor's met other characters in the modern series, they have, you know, time travel devices that are like personal time travel devices, you know, right. Some kind of wrist, you know, thing that they can jump in time. And that's kind of where I thought they were going with this. So when we get the reveal that there's actually a TARDIS, another TARDIS, and they walk into this TARDIS, it blew my mind.
Yeah.
I wasn't expecting that at all. I guess I had somehow missed this detail about the classic series that he came across another, you know, Gallifreyan at this early on. But man, I was giddy. Like when they walk in there, I was like, oh my goodness, like that, did they just walk into a TARDIS?
Right.
Like, did you have any kind of like that sort of reaction, or did you just kind of see it coming when you saw him kind of messing around with this sarcophagus?
No, when he started messing around with the sarcophagus, I kind of thought that's the direction that they were going to go, but I verbally said, oh my goodness, he has a TARDIS, as he was walking through the door. Like, similar to you, it blew my mind to think that here we have another time traveler. I don't think at that point they even referred to themselves as Time Lords in Doctor Who, but here we have another Time Lord who we're calling the Monk.
Yeah.
And we have the Doctor, and now we have the Monk, and he has his TARDIS, and he, not only that, but the Doctor even talks about how, like, it's a Mark IV, or it's a better TARDIS than his, it's a later version than his, and, like, they're separated by 50 years. So the Doctor recognizes that this TARDIS is even better than the TARDIS that he has, and he's amazed that this guy knows how to drive his TARDIS better than the Doctor knows how to drive his TARDIS. It honestly was just this really cool aspect that I did not at all expect to see, let alone see in these episodes.
Yeah, totally unexpected twist for me. Did not see it coming. It had me super excited. And anytime there's anything to do with other Time Lords that the Doctor runs across, like, that gets me excited. And I did not expect to see that this early on in the classic series.
And he totally messed with the Monk.
As far as
like the ending of it, what happens at the end of it, like that blew my mind too.
Yeah, because I mean, the thing is, there's this character out there now that we know that he's a Time Lord. I mean, they never say he's a Time Lord, but. He's a Time Lord because Vicky even asked the Doctor, is he from where you're from? I forget how she worded it. And he said, yes.
Yeah.
He's got a TARDIS. He's called the Monk. You know, we have the Master, the Doctor. Now we have the Monk. So there's this other character out there that is a Time Lord that, now I don't know too much about, you know, future appearances of this character. I think he does come back at some point, from something that I saw today, but I'm kind of purposely staying away from it because I want to be, you know, surprised on what happens. But, I mean, this is something I feel like it would be cool to if they even brought this back into the modern series, you know? Like, you know, we know the Master was a Time Lord that he ran across during the classic series, and they brought that into the modern series. So how cool would that be if you have, you know, this character show up? And it could be, you know, he's a Time Lord, so obviously he can regenerate, so it doesn't, you know, it doesn't matter that this actor's not around anymore, I'm assuming. That, you know, you could have another character show up and have it revealed that it's this same guy, the Monk, you know. So I don't know, I just thought that was a cool element to this storyline that I just wasn't expecting to happen, so it had me really excited. But you were kind of alluding to what the Doctor, you know, kind of the Doctor doesn't appreciate the way this guy is using time travel. You know, he's going around, he's messing with time, you know, he's messing with events. He has said that he, I guess he helped, what was it?
Leonardo da Vinci?
Yes.
Oh, so he helped build Stonehenge?
He helped build Stonehenge. he went and talked to Leonardo da Vinci, which is why Leonardo da Vinci was able to come up with, you know, these sketches for flying machines. He's talking about trying to get, you know, trying to help Shakespeare get Hamlet on television, you know, so he's trying to get some modern technology back into the past and kind of ramp up the future a little bit and mess with the past. So yeah, the doctor's like, no, I'm not having any of that. So he actually pretty much just traps this guy. Did you kind of get what was going on as far as the way that he did it?
I as he was doing it, I thought he was going to, like, I don't know. It looked to me like he was getting ready to pull someone's tooth, which I know that's not what he was doing, but like wrapping dental floss around something and then slowly walking away from it. I thought what he was going to do is like pull the lever and then all of a sudden the TARDIS would just fly away, like without anybody inside of it. I thought that's what he was going to do. But when he pulled that whole like dimension thing out of it, and so the inside of the TARDIS shrunk, all I could think of was Capaldi, where the inside stayed the same but the outside shrunk, like the whole dimension circuit getting all wonky and things shrinking. But here we have it the opposite, where the inside shrinks though the outside stays the same, so this guy can no longer go inside his TARDIS, which I thought was both cruel and funny all at the same time.
Yeah, I actually kind of felt bad for the guy.
Yeah, totally.
I thought there might have been a better way the doctor could have handled this. It would seem very, very underhanded, you know, where the doctor maybe could have, you know, talked to the guy and said, hey, you know, like, this isn't the best way to do this. Maybe we could come to some kind of agreement here. I don't know. Maybe report him to the, you know, the Time Lords, because the Time Lords are still out there, right? Like, they haven't been wiped out yet.
Especially since, like, this guy, like, their relationship, their interactions, yeah, he locked the doctor up, but then the doctor got free. And then when the doctor started talking to him about meddling with time, it was just kind of like this back and forth, oh, yeah, I do this. And the doctor's like, oh, you shouldn't do this. You know the golden rule about time travel, never, never interfere. And, like, it's just kind of like this cordial relationship going on. And then for the doctor to pull something like this where he just totally, totally messes this guy up forever, because Time Lords live a long time and they regenerate, so this guy is going to have to live through a lot of stuff. But, like, yeah, it's just like totally out of the blue where the doctor just decides to mess with him like this.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, I hope we see this guy again. I think we will. I did see that he does make at least one more appearance. So I think it's kind of cool that there's this other Time Lord out there that I wasn't aware of, and I'm hoping to see him, you know, see him again, and maybe, you know, who knows, he could possibly show up in the modern series if he's still alive out there. So did you recognize the actress that was playing the wife?
No.
Okay. I recognized her right away. As soon as she came on the screen, I said, that is the same actress that was in the caveman episodes
of Doctor Who. Her teeth.
It was something about the shape of her mouth, yeah, that yeah. I just kind of was like, that's the same actress. So I did look it up today, and it is. It's the actress's name is Alethea Carlton, or Charlton, and she did appear in An Unearthly Child as her. And also Edith in The Time Meddler. So, yeah, they used the same actress. And she was very recognizable. She kind of played a very similar looking, you know, in the one she was a cave woman. In this one, she was not too far off from a cave woman as far as the way that she was dressed and stuff. So
her preferred form of makeup is dirt.
Yes. So apparently this woman is typecast.
Poor her.
Yeah, so overall, I really like these episodes. I hope it's not kind of like, oh, you know, they did really awesome with this, and then it kind of gets back into, you know, some of the more odd stuff. But I hope to see more of this type of storytelling as we move on in Doctor Who, into season 3, now that we're done with season 2.
Totally agree. That's I really enjoyed this episode. Last episode, or last story arc we watched, I really enjoyed that one, but this even took it the next step. Like, I really enjoyed this one to the point where I was ready to watch more classic episodes. It just, It was funny when it was supposed to be funny, but it still had an awesome story when it was supposed to have a great story. I loved the interactions between the characters, not only Steven and Vicky, but also the monk and the doctor, and just the doctor's idiosyncrasies when he's thinking to himself and when he's, oh, interesting, interesting, we must be here. And
yeah,
everything just was right. It was right where it ought to be in my mind. I really enjoyed it. I thought this would be a great episode for, or a great story arc for everybody to watch.
Yeah, this is one I can definitely, I can't say this about too many storylines with the classic series so far, but this is one I would recommend to even modern fans. If you're looking for a Doctor Who episode in the classic series to kind of go back and
if you need a first Doctor fix,
yeah, if you want to see an episode about, you know, what the first Doctor was like and one of his better adventures, I would definitely recommend Time Meddler. And I tweeted about it tonight because I got so excited when they walked into that TARDIS. You should have seen me. I was like, I was extremely excited. I was like, anytime I have that kind of an emotional reaction to anything I watch on TV or movies, I typically feel like I need to tweet about it. So I sent out a tweet about, you know, about Time Meddler and how I was really enjoying it. And, you know, typically when I send out a tweet about watching Doctor Who, you know, I get maybe a couple favorites, but this one, I got a lot of, you know, people were favoriting the tweet. A lot of people were replying saying, yeah, that's one of my favorite storylines as well. So, you know, this is a good one. And I would definitely recommend it to the modern fans that maybe are hesitant to check out some classic Who. Go check out Time Meddler. It's a solid episode, a solid storyline. All right, well, you ready to wrap this one up, Adam?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, well, as usual, you can leave us a review on iTunes. If you haven't done that yet, head on over to iTunes. If you listen to the show and you enjoy it, head over there and leave us a nice 5-star review. You can also follow us on Twitter at Bad Wolf Podcast. Facebook, search for us, Bad Wolf Radio. And you can send us an email. We will be checking our emails regularly now. We have learned our lesson. We realized, you know, the fault. We are both checking the emails daily. So if you want to send us an email, we will not wait a year to read it. If you send it, we promise. So send us an email at badwolfpodcast@gmail.com. And you can now find us on, like we mentioned at the top of the show, Shot Glass Digital Podcast Network. Check out our new episodes there. And until next time,
later days.